Imagine, you're finally cleaning out your gutters when the smoke alarm starts blaring from inside. Smoke billows out of the window. ADT's affordable DIY systems are built for those moments where everything can change in a second. They're easy to set up, customizable, and help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home, and with ADT, you won't. ADT prioritizes your peace of mind with the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. With the ADT Plus app, you stay in control from virtually anywhere. Don't wait to prepare for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire. Plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Today on the On Enquirer podcast, let's zoom out a little bit on the state of college football. Scott Docterman from The Athletic, one of the best national writers and reporters out there, he joins us to break down all the things happening in college football right now. We've had spring meetings in the big conferences, the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, all of that, and a lot of thoughts and opinions about where college sports and college football especially go from here. Should the college football playoff expand to 24? Brett Bielema and almost the entire Big Ten think so. The SEC, maybe not so much. What's the future of the cost of rosters in college football, which have just exploded here recently? How are we reining this in? Should it be reined in? What is the future of that? And then we actually talk some football. Where does Illinois football kind of fit in? Is this a good thing? All of this chaos, it seems like it's been pretty good for Illini athletics as you've seen basketball and football rise. And what are the big storylines for Big Ten football in 2026? Scott Docterman breaks it all down for us. Again, one of the better national writers and reporters in the country. He's based out of Iowa, but now has expanded to be one of the national writers and one of my favorite guys to follow in the sport and just a good guy. So it was good to catch up with Scott Docterman. He's coming up next right here on the Illini Enquirer podcast. This episode of the Illini Enquirer podcast is brought to you by Columbia Street Roastery. That weather is definitely getting hotter. Summer is almost here. But now's the time to go check out the cold brew cans at Columbia Street Roastery. You can get them in town. If you're in downtown Champaign, go check out Columbia Street Roastery there or go to the Yard in Urbana. Great setup there. But even if you are out of town, you can get Columbia Street Roastery, smooth, easy to drink, perfect on the go, cold brew coffee cans. I love their nitro brew, so go in locally and check that out. But you can get these cans delivered to you straight at home. And you can get 10% off your first order at csrcoffee.com by using code IlliniAllTheWay at csrcoffee.com. You also get free shipping on orders over $45. And if you're iced tea fans in these hot summer months, try out their iced tea packets to make freshly brewed iced tea at home. They have everyone's favorite flavors. You can try out their Fiesta Mexicana. It's a sangria-like flavor with fruits of mango, lime, strawberry, orange, and peach, or just go with their traditional. It's a good, smooth, traditional black iced tea. So visit csrcoffee.com to get 10% off your first order with code IlliniAllTheWay plus free shipping on orders over $45 at csrcoffee.com.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
All right, there's so much going on in the college football world, even though college football is still several months away. And nobody really does it better than Scott Docterman, The Athletic, covering college football on the national stage. So we figure we'd bring him in after these Big Ten meetings. We got the SEC meetings in the spring going on right now. But Scott, we really appreciate your time. How are you, man?
I'm great, Jeremy. How's it going, man? It's nice out. Hopefully you get a few days to, I don't know, do nothing or do nothing at night. You know, have a nice couple of days off.
Yeah, I actually get to watch some White Sox baseball, which I haven't done in a couple of years. So they're actually a little entertaining. But Scott, I wanted to bring you on because the college football world is crazy, but it's never been more popular. But I think of like 5 years ago, how much this sport has changed just with the SEC adding the schools it did, the Big Ten adding the West Coast schools. We now have college football rosters that are $20 to $50 million, right? Like, and now we have the college football playoff that's already expanded to 12, and now we're talking about expanding it to 24. Just how do you reflect on all the change that has happened and how quickly it has to this sport?
You know, college football for 100 years moved at a glacial pace. We couldn't hardly talk about conferences changing their bowl affiliations, you know, 40 years ago. Now it's like an avalanche. I mean, with everything that has happened, I mean, really since, you know, the bowl championship series was such a big deal because the Big Ten gave up control of the Rose Bowl and the Pac-12 did, or the Pac-10 at that time did. And then when we went to the playoff, and then it became, you know, just incredibly, you know, just game-changing because the championship was outside the bowl structure. And then you had NIL, you throw on the open transfer portal at the same time. And, you know, then a 12-team playoff, which was in the works and it finally got ironed out. And now we're talking about going to 24. It's just amazing how quickly this has all changed. But I think I'm as nostalgic as it gets for all the past era, but it's gone. And you've got to adapt to the future. And as you mentioned, you know, $20 to $50 million rosters, only a portion of that comes from the schools themselves. Everybody's coming, you know, from outside, and you're expecting, and if you're a booster, you know, before you were just kind of given to the program and hoping to get your name on the wall, you know, of the locker room. It's like this part of the locker room sponsored by, you know, this family or the so-and-so family head football coach or something like that. Now you're expecting to win. You're basically an owner and you're donating. And so you expect success. And in today's world, getting to a 12-team playoff is so difficult. And then the drop-off is so deep when you're talking about a bowl game and the interest. I mean, the interest is there to an extent, but not across the board. That I think that's why you're seeing the quick shift to a playoff structure. Because you look at Illinois, I mean, it's a great example. 19 wins the last 2 years, had a 10-win season 2 years ago, 9 wins last year. Would two years ago would have made a 2014 playoff. Last year would have been right on the border and could have, you know, you could have had Brett out there, you know, really pushing his case towards the end of the year and probably made a pretty good case. So this was, you know, you need that in this sport because otherwise a couple of quick losses and you're not in the 12-team conversation, fans are going to wane, money's going to drop, and heads are going to roll, which is what we saw at LSU and Penn State. Once they hit loss number three, gone. So that's why there's so many changes going on with college football right now.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly, you know, I struggle with, like, is this better than what we had before? And you have the nostalgia of what college football already was, but then you look at the metrics of all of this, and again, it's the ratings are better than ever. The money flowing into the sport is bigger than ever. So how do you kind of, you know, Illinois, Iowa only play 2 out of 5 years now, Scott. Like it doesn't happen that often. We're losing some of those rivalries, but it doesn't seem to be changing the bottom line for college football right now.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I hate it for all sports. You know, football, it stinks because it's, you know, 40% of the time you're only playing, you know, border foes that you compete against and have for a century plus and everything. But you know, basketball, it really kills me because those home and homes in the old Big Ten days were just, you know, it was like pre-2000. You could expect if the Illini and Hawkeyes were playing, each team had a loss, you know, on the road. It was going to be 15 to 20 points. It just happened that way. Now you don't get that. But I think with football, You can remember fondly the bowl days, and there were some really big matchups there, and you know, the mythical national titles. But I also remember the consternation over split national titles. You know, you look back in the 90s, I mean, Penn State's offense in 94 was off the charts. I mean, averaged 40-plus points a game, and they're ranked second behind Nebraska, you know, who was also undefeated. And it would have been an unbelievable national title game between those two teams, but Nebraska won. And part of that, and this was what was frustrating as I research a lot of this, is Tom Osborne hadn't won a national title. So it was kind of like, well, he hasn't, Joe Paterno has, and we're going to, you know, sports writers kind of wrote in Nebraska. So, you know, kind of validate his career. 97,
what a terrible national title. What a terrible way to name a national champion or crown a national
exactly.
champion.
And that's the way it was so many different times. I mean, and it was even worse when you start to go back like the 50s and 40s and 60s. It was just absolutely dreadful. So at least now they're playing on the field. They're playing against one another, and you feel like the team playing the best at the end of the year is winning the national title. And Indiana was the best throughout the season last year. So, you know, but as much as I miss those days, Jeremy, I look at what Indiana did. You know, the rise, what Illinois has done with Brett Bielema. Neither one of them would have happened pre-transfer portal, pre-NIL. Because now those team, you know, those players in the South would have stayed in the South. The players that, you know, now you can afford to pay them, you can afford to keep them, and if you coach them, and I think both Brett and Cignetti and Ferentz and all these others are just tremendous program builders and maintainers. That these players see that, hey, I can go there and get developed and prove myself and become an NFL caliber player, and I can also compete at a high level, and it's worked. So I think it's allowed the middle class to compete at a level that, you know, they're never going to be the five-star kings the way Ohio State and Michigan are, but you can get players at a consistent level, and then if you build them up, then they can compete. And I think that, to me, that's really exciting, and I think that's what could be exciting with the 2014 playoff.
So let's go there, because that's the big news out of the Big Ten meetings. The Big Ten is all in on expanding this playoff to 24. I get why Brett Bielema is all in on that. For yeah. As you mm-hmm. said, like, if I'm Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, yeah. I would want more access to this. The SEC does not seem as in favor of all of that. So we just expanded to 12, Scott. So can you whiteboard for our listeners, like, why is this such a hot topic, and why is there such a push right now to expand to 24 so quickly?
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, the investment that people are making in the sport, you know, really demands some sort of appealing finish. And, you know, again, no offense to the Citrus Bowl or the Music City Bowl or the bowl formerly known as the Outback. They're all great places, but they're consolation prizes. And you see opt-outs, you see, you know, coaches leaving those situations, and they're kind of glorified exhibitions to for the most part. The playoff push, though, I think what you're seeing is administrators look at it at a bottom line perspective. You know, the coaches that get fired after three losses, now they still have hope. You look at it from the coaching perspective that I got a lot of new guys here. We're still feeling our way in. We've got a stacked early schedule, but now I can keep everybody invested. And then you look at the teams that are remaining the rest of the way. I mean, one thing I went through was last year, with 3 weeks to go in the regular season, there were 35 power conference teams with three losses or less. You know, so more than half the power conferences with the most important time of the year had an opportunity to get into the playoff. But with a 12-team playoff, and I go by my colleague Chris Vanini, who does an unbelievable job, his ranking, he does a weekly ranking, the top nine made the playoff and number 12, and then there were the two G5 teams. So you're basically telling, you know, 2/3 of the teams with three losses or less, with 3 weeks to go, that your games aren't really going to matter. And to me, what this does is it suggests at the most important time of the year, you're playing for something of significant value, which is a playoff opportunity. And I know some people have said, well, but there's, you know, it's going to lessen the, you know, the what an Ohio State or Michigan matters, or they're going to rest their players. Well, first of all, they'll never rest their players, because beating that team on the other side is a paramount. I saw that 2 years ago up close when they lost to Michigan and then they won the national title. It still killed them that they lost to Michigan. They just can't stand it. But then also, going down the stretch and having those games. I mean, for administrators, if you're 7-3 and you got a home game left, or you're 5-3 and you got two home games left, some schools are going to be worried. All right, are we going to have enough people in the stadium? But if you're 7-3 and you've got two games left, and let's say it's this year, and Illinois and Iowa are both 7-3 going into that penultimate game in Champaign, that place is filled. That place is rocking. People are amped up because the winner still is alive. The loser probably isn't. So you got a huge game between border rivals, good programs built with the same principles and tenets, and TV is going to take an effect too. And then not only that, if you're Auburn or you're South Carolina or you're Virginia Tech and you are in that same ballpark too, you're paying attention to that game. Like, who do we want to win? How are we going to shape up? So all these games really matter, you know, from television, attendance, and keeping fan engagement high, and also allowing investments in your program. And I think that's something that everybody recognizes with this. And actually, I'm kind of the outlier of the people on my staff that I work with. I actually do think that it's the best thing for the sport.
You kind of gave a good pitch of it, Scott. What is the downside? Yeah. What is the negative pitch of why maybe some schools in the SEC wouldn't want to do it, or why traditional fans might not want to expand further?
I think they're looking at it as watering down the product, which I completely get it's an exclusive club to compete for a national championship. It's been bowl games, matchups between 1-2, or, you know, and even in the old days, it'd be 1-3 and 2-5. And then we got to the 4-team playoff, you know, BCS championship game matched 1-2, the 4-team playoff, four best teams. And we're always arguing over 5-6 and what have you. And then it went to the 12-team playoff, and it still felt like Ohio State and Notre Dame squaring off in the first one. They were down the list, but they were still really good teams. But now you start to get into teams 20, 21. You know, Iowa would have got in last year at 8-4. Iowa was a really good 8-4 team. I mean, they were – if they had a different schedule, they might have been 10-2 or 11-1. And they could have done some damage. But I could see other people saying, yeah, but that's just – that's too low of a bar for what we've expected out of this sport. I get it. You know, I mean, there's an exclusivity that you kind of want to maintain. But by looking back over the last handful of years, I've seen, though, situations like, take 2019, an example. Penn State was ranked 10th in the final CFP poll at 10-2. Iowa was 16th at 9-3, and Minnesota was 10-2, and they're ranked 18th. Only Penn State would have gotten in. They all played each other, and they all beat each other. Penn State would have been the only one getting in, because even though Iowa was 16th, they would have gotten jumped by one of the group of five teams in a 16-team playoff. Who was better? I don't know. I mean, Minnesota beats Auburn in a bowl game. Iowa blows out USC in a bowl game. They all, to me, felt real similar. And then I looked at, like, all the other teams in that category, and they were all real similar. Auburn was 9-3. And so if to cut it off at 16 – you're going to really have to try to put a lot of pressure on that selection committee to try to deduce who's better in two different leagues with similar records, similar results, and then in their own league. Now, as the leagues are 18 teams deep in Big Ten, you know, teams don't play each other. Iowa and Illinois didn't play each other last year. Who was better? We don't know. You know, they didn't play. So I think that's why, to me, I think the 24 probably works better, because I'm seeing more of a split after teams 20. Than I am between teams like 12 and 20, because I think they're just really bunched up together.
The other part of this, I always got to remind myself, like, there's two major networks that are behind a lot of all of this as well. As you got Fox with the Big Ten and ESPN with the SEC. I mean, Fox probably wants some more product, yeah. Right? And that's why they would want to expand. Do you see this getting done? Like, do you see the compromise between obviously the SEC and the Big Ten, but also Fox and ESPN? That do you see this happening, a 2014 playoff, or what do you think is most likely to happen next?
Yeah, I think it does. I don't know if it'll be for like 2027 or like 2028. The things that are kind of hanging out for the SEC that make this a challenge. About that, right now they're publicly against one another. There's a lot of people who are for it and a lot of people who are against it, and they need to be swayed one way or the other to make it all work. The SEC championship is a big deal culturally to that conference. The Big Ten is cool. And last year's was incredible between Indiana and Ohio State, a 1-2 game. But I covered a few of those Big Ten West, Big Ten East games that weren't real competitive. And so I don't know that it has the cultural impact that it once did in the Big Ten, or that it could. And then other schools, you know, other leagues, it doesn't really matter. So I think that the cultural aspect of the SEC, they have to kind of get over that. You know, there's also the calendar is a big deal right now. Almost every coach I've talked to wants it done a lot earlier. And so the challenge right now is, can they end the regular season on Thanksgiving weekend, immediately start first round playoffs and first weekend in December, second weekend in December be the second round, which will be the bye teams hosting games. So two weekends of hosting on campus. Then it gets a little tricky with the schedule, thanks to the NFL, who decides that. I compare them. They're like your buddy in college who is the best looking dude in the bar, and you're talking to a girl or something, and all of a sudden he just walks up. He's like, "Hey, how you doing?" And then all of a sudden you're like, "Dude, what? Why are you doing this?" You know. But that's the NFL when it comes to TV. Like,
they can just take Saturday.
We want to play on Black Friday. Oh, well, you want to play on, you know, you want to have your playoffs on the third Saturday of December? Well, we're just going to put Bears and Packers against Oregon and James Madison, you know, and have an incredible, fantastic game. One of my favorite games of all time.
That's right.
But, you know, and so they got to figure that out. But their hope is that at worst case scenario, the semifinals are like January 1st, and then maybe one extra game after that. Because the portal, they want to get their team set up and everything like that, and you know, classes, they still have to go to class. So I think that's the challenge, but I think that's something that they can work through.
Guys, I'm pushing 40. I've noticed the older I get, the less forgiving even a couple drinks can be the next morning. You feel like you're responsible. You have a couple beers, you get home at a reasonable time, drink some water, eat some food. You do everything right, yet you still wake up feeling kind of off the next day. Foggy, low energy, not fully yourself. That's why I tried Cheers Restore. And honestly, I was skeptical at first, but the difference the next morning really surprised me. I slept better, woke up feeling way more normal, and actually felt productive the next day instead of dragging through the morning. This is Cheers Restore after alcohol aid. You take it up after your last drink or before bed, and it works while you sleep. Cheers says you'll wake up feeling at least 50% better or your money back. It helps your body metabolize alcohol more efficiently and supports liver health with ingredients like DHM and cysteine. Cheers is backed by doctors, PhDs, and over 1,000 verified clinicians. They've sold over 50 million doses. It's available at Target, CVS, and Walgreens. But take Cheers Restore after your last drink or before bed and wake up feeling at least 50% off better or your money back. For a limited time, listeners are getting 20% off their order by using code ALINI at cheershealth.com. Just head to cheershealth.com and use code ALINI for 20% off. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Illini Inquirer sent you.
Imagine you're finally cleaning out your gutters when the smoke alarm starts blaring from inside. Smoke billows out of the window. ADT's affordable DIY systems are built for those moments where everything can change in a second. They're easy to set up, customizable, and help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home. And with ADT, you won't. ADT prioritizes your peace of mind with the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. With the ADT Plus app, you stay in control from virtually anywhere. Don't wait to prepare for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Well, Scott, when we came into this year, there was supposed to be a cap on roster spending. That has certainly not been the case. Like, I asked Josh Whitman in January, I said, like, all these coaches, these new coaches are being promised $25 million rosters. I was told that was not going to happen. Yeah. So where are we at with spending, the CSC, and just where pay-for-play is going? Are we ever going to burst a bubble here? Like, how do you see this moving forward? I know there's legislation being proposed and being denied, and now there's more legislation being proposed, but what's next here? Where are we at?
I don't know how you curb it. I really don't. I wondered that from day one when they said, oh, yeah, we'll just take everything in-house. Unless you you find a way for the athletes to sign away, like they had to before the, you know, when it was NLI, you know, and they signed away all their rights, name, image, and likeness. That's the only way to me that this will work. Guess what? They're going to get sued and lose. Yep. If you're Caitlin Clark and you've got Nike and you got State Farm and you got Gatorade and you got all these sponsors coming after you, oh no, I can't do this because I'm taking, you know, $35,000 from Iowa. I mean, there'll be way more than that, but yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and same thing goes for football. I mean, like Fernando Mendoza was a quarterback everybody expected to be a good player. Nobody expected to win the Heisman Trophy and produce one of the most iconic plays in college football history, you know? So I don't see any letdown there. I mean, you know, if they can get some sort of legislation to allow them to fight against some sort of antitrust arguments in court, then they may be able to curb some of these rules. But again, every single program is going to try to find a way. It's like, hey, we're in this, locked in this battle for this transfer quarterback, and that's all we need between, you know, going to the playoff and maybe having a bye in the playoff and maybe getting to the Final Four. And, you know, so I think that's, you know, that's something that's going to be ongoing. It always has. I mean, there's always been bagmen anyway, but now it's just above board. But now you got to figure out, how do you make this work? I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, Scott, it's interesting because you mentioned it, like, without the rules the way they are now, the portal, NIL, pay for play in general, in Indiana can happen. Like, it's not going to happen a lot, I don't think. I think this is a pretty rare story, but a program like Illinois can emerge. Mm-hmm. A program like Texas Tech can do what it's doing right now. But also, is there a limit? Because the haves are just becoming bigger haves right now. So what do you see for the future for programs like Illinois or Minnesota, that's been a really good program under PJ Fleck? Like, what is the future for, I guess, the middle class in the Power Four and Big Ten, SEC, all that?
I think it's the most exciting period that you've ever seen when it comes to college football. Because if Indiana, everybody says, and this is a double-edged sword, if Indiana can do it, why can't we? Mm-hmm. Which is, of course, why coaches get fired. It's like, well, you know, if he can win it, what, you know, I hear it over, even in Iowa where I live, and it's like, you know, well, we need to go find our Cignetti. I'm like, shut up.
Good luck.
I mean, you guys have a good coach. Let's just leave it at that. But I think it gives everybody hope that if they can do it, how can we do that too? And when you look at Indiana, player for player, they were talented, but they weren't as talented as Ohio State or even Alabama. But what they were was incredibly developed. I mean, you know, the fundamentally sound, they put it together, great play calling, great scheme, played with effort and toughness. They did it all, and their execution was top-notch. And so if you're a coach, you know, and I think Brett and PJ are great examples, I think they're very good coaches that, you know, and it just takes a lot. You know, you got to hit the right people at the right time. Illinois had a lot of guys coming back last year. You felt like this was an opportunity, and maybe they didn't reach the level they wanted, but they still won 9 games. Yep. For Illinois to win 19 in 2 years, that's a really good, you know, start there. And you just keep it rolling, you know, kind of like Kirk at Iowa, where, you know, he's maintained a level where they're one of four programs to win 8 games in every real season for 11 years. But now, and then there are the years where they have those spikes where they get up to 10 or 11 or 12 wins. And that's what these programs, these middle tier programs, are more than capable of. I think you look at Brett, if he strikes gold at quarterback and they got a couple of really good defenders, you know, Gabe Yakis or, you know, somebody like that. Next thing you know, and you have a favorable schedule, it can all work. And I think that's what's exciting to me, because if you look at Cignetti, and you've been covering this a long time, if this would have happened in like 2018, there's no way, not in a 2-year period for sure, that this could happen, because he's going to have to go out recruit people for freshmen. Well, he's Indiana, and so that you could just forget Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Then you're like, well, we got to go up against, you know, go to the Chicagoland, and then you got to compete. And that period of time would have been Wisconsin, Michigan State, Iowa, yep, Illinois, Northwestern with Pat Fitzgerald, and you're going to be lucky to get your guys, you know, any guys. And so it might take 5 years for you to be a middle tier team in the Big Ten. Now with the portal and the fact they brought all these guys with them, and they were all experienced, tough guys who knew how to play the game, and then you sprinkle in a couple of talented players, man, you know, and take chances on guys like D'Angelo Pons, who's, you know, 5'8", but is incredible. That's why I really like, I think this is why the sport's continuing to grow in popularity, because fans now see a correlation between I give my money, we get this player, we have this success. And but it's just, you know, just find some guardrails. Yeah. And if you do and you have equal access for everybody, this sport will be as popular as it's ever been and continue to grow.
What do you make, Scott? I'm interested in always getting outside thoughts of what do you make of what Brett Bielema has done for this program, what this program has become under Brett?
I think it's great, because I think we've seen over the years with Illinois, even before, whether it was before with Lovey or going all the way back, that there would always be these, you know, Ron Zook, you know, one great year, you know, Ron Turner, one great year, and then a fallback. And the consistency was just maddening, you know, because you see the talent. I remember that 2007, 2008 era when with Juice Williams and Rashad Mendenhall and Aurelius Ben and, you know, Vontae Davis and stuff. That, I mean, that was really, really talented team. And then it was really talented going into 08. And it's like, what are you doing? What happened here? How do you go 5-7 with this team? Worst case scenario, it should be like 8-3 or 8-4 or something. But, you know, and then the year that they started 6-0 and then lost their last six games. That's what you're watching with Illinois. And Michigan State was kind of that way too before Mark D'Antonio got there. And I think that's what I like about Brett, is that he's put together a team the way he wants to build it, which is the right way. You know, line of scrimmage, toughness, you know, everybody bought in. And then you sprinkle in some talent, and they've been really good. And I think building that consistency up, which was in what, 22, they were within a game of winning the Big Ten West Championship. 23, they fell back, but they didn't permanently fall back. They went back and they won 10, and then they won 9. And to do that, I think, you know, suggests that he's a really good coach. And I do think the program is now, the talent is matching the wins and losses. And I think with Brett in place, I think that they're more than capable of being bowl eligible every year, and then having spikes when they have it, when it all comes together.
Yeah, I love the comp. I use Iowa all the time. Like, hey, can you be that? But D'Antonio, Michigan State's a great example as well of what they could become. There is going to be football in the fall, despite all of this stuff.
Yeah,
and is Oregon the story of the Big Ten with everybody coming back? Like, what to you is the story of Big Ten football entering 2026?
I think there's like tiers, and it's kind of awesome to watch, because I think you look at, like, to me, the three elite teams were the teams that made the playoff last year. I think Oregon, to me, is my number one. They have a great defensive line. Their O-line is still in place. They blocked their asses off last year. They were great. Dante Moore coming back. Can he take his game to be a little more consistent? And then if he can, then he might win a Heisman. And they've got some incredible talent, and, you know, DeCorian Moore, McMullen out there, and McMillan at receiver. I think that they are, you know, in that talent. And then they look at Ohio State, and they bring back almost all their offense. You know, the best receiver I've ever seen, you know, Jeremiah Smith. I think Chris Henry is probably, you know, I say this every year, Jeremy, where I, you know, every couple of years, it's like, oh, Jackson Smith and Jigba is the best receiver I've ever seen. Yeah. And then Marvin Harrison is the best. now it's Jeremiah Smith. Is Chris Henry Jr. going to be that one guy? Probably. Julian Sand. I mean, they're not going anywhere. But the one thing that they have is the most difficult schedule I've ever seen. I mean, because with the addition of the West Coast teams, they're playing Oregon and USC. They're also playing Indiana, Michigan, at Iowa. I mean, it's just, and then, oh, and Texas and the non-con. I mean, they could be one of those 9-3 teams that could win it all. And Indiana, they're an interesting story to me too, because what do they do now that they've won? And, you know, can Hoover be a good quarterback for them? Can he be like Curtis Rourke? Is he better than Curtis Rourke? You know, I wouldn't put him in Mendoza's category, but you never know. And they do have enough pieces back where they should be still very, very competitive. But, and then there's the kind of the blue bloods that changed coaches, Michigan and Penn State. You know, I know Matt Campbell now for a while and watched him pretty closely, and he's the right guy. I mean, he built Iowa State, which was in Indiana categories, you know, as far as just not being any good forever. And he built them into a very competitive program where they won 11 games, which they never even won double digits before, got to the Big 12 championship twice. And I think he'll be good. They've got an advantageous schedule. So if their depth is good, then they should be very competitive at double-digit wins. And then Michigan with Kyle Whittingham, you know, it's kind of like they sent in the grown-ups to clean up the mess.
That's right.
You know, so I can he get the most out of Bryce Underwood? If he can, then this is a then this team will be formidable. If not, And then you've got kind of other teams with bigger question marks, but you just kind of wonder, like, can Hauser be a good quarterback for, you know, his second shot in the Big Ten after going from Michigan State to, you know, East Carolina and out of Illinois? And can, you know, they have so many people they're missing, they're replacing on defense. But of course, I think Xavier Scott's still one of the best defensive backs in the Big Ten. Iowa still has the guts of a great offensive line. It was number one last year. Two big questions for them: quarterback and defensive line. They lost a lot of pieces there. So, and playing Michigan and Ohio State back to back early is going to test them. USC, there's no reason why they can't lead the country in passing yards, maybe total offense. Scoring should be near 40 points a game. But can they play enough defense in the good games to win? I think that's a huge question for me. You know, Washington, I think they're in that same category too, which, you know, bring back DeMond Williams, but how much did his little foray into I might go in the portal, and then they're like, we're going to sue you, and okay.
Oh, yeah, that happened.
You know, how much does that impact his team? I mean, do they forget it? Is it like, pro mindset, or is it, you know, we don't really like this dude, and, you know, and then something goes wrong? I mean, maybe as pivotal as any game early in the year is when Iowa goes to Washington on a Friday night, and because I think the loser's probably not even going to have a prayer. I mean, Iowa's first three games of Big Ten: at Michigan, Ohio State at home, at Washington on 6 days. 13-day period, boom. Wow. They could be 0-3 in the Big Ten, and if they had a 2014 playoff, they'd still be alive.
That's right. That's right. Well, Scott Docterman, The Athletic, great rundown of everything that's happening in college athletics. Figured you'd be the guy to do it, and you delivered. So we appreciate it, man, and we'll see you at Big Ten Media Days in July, man.
Yeah, sounds good, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff as always from Scott Docterman. Read his stuff at theathletic.com. We appreciate his time as always. We got a busy week next week on the Illini Inquirer podcast. We have a big guest that a lot of you are going to be interested in hearing from, and we're going to have some extended time with this person, so we're very excited about that. I just don't want to throw it out there next week and say a schedule changes, but we also have Tom Fornelli on the schedule. So the fact that Tom Fornelli, who's great guess, one of the big guests, might not be the biggest guest next week, says something about what we could have. So looking forward to our slate of guests next week, and continuing to bring you some insight as the off season goes along here. Big week for Illini football recruiting next week, with the first of three official visit weekends for them as they try to add to the class of 2027. And of course, Illinois basketball, those players will be on campus here very, very shortly. So we'll catch up on all of that coming up next week on the Illini Inquirer podcast. But thank you for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, follow us, rate us, review us. We appreciate when you do that. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button down below. Hit the notifications bell. Subscribe to us. That really helps us out. And if you're not a VIP member at IlliniInquirer.com, try it out now. $1 for your first month of VIP access, or 50% off for your first year. Go check that out at IlliniInquirer.com. For Scott Docterman, I'm Jeremy Warner. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.